Open up your ears and open up your mind. They'll reach into your throat and pull out your spine. And when the sun blows up and the earth is gone, there's still Experience Grind with Kyle and Sean.
In a world of streaming services, I know that I never have to worry about losing access to a movie. Because as it turns out, I just sign up for something 3 years in the past, and then current present Sean is thrilled, but also a little miffed, but mostly thrilled, man, that he doesn't have to figure out how to watch something.
That is the benefit for you. I will say, though, man, that's like 3 years you weren't taking advantage, and you were just paying, dog. You got,
oh, dude,
for real, man, you should try out the Rocket Money app. It's huge.
This movie cost me like $200 to watch. No, I mean, realistically, I think I've gone to cancel Paramount Plus like 6 times.
Mm-hmm.
I've definitely gone to do it, but they make it like impossible for you to cancel it. You actually have to go onto a computer to do it.
Oh, yeah. You can't do it through the app. Bullshit.
Nope. You know what?
Although,
folks, this is accountability right here.
I'm going to cancel it live
on this network.
It's now one of the two websites that gets used the most in our household because I don't watch it. It's that, Paramount Plus, and Discovery Plus, which Paramount we have access to via the generosity of Mandy's mom.
Yeah.
And Discovery Plus via my mom. Like I said, both channels that Mandy pretty much exclusively watches, though, for different and varying reasons.
Mm-hmm. But
Paramount has been enjoyable because Paramount also has all of the old school Nickelodeon shows. The only issue is, yes, it doesn't have all of them, and I didn't find that out till I'd watched every episode of Salute Your Shorts, and I was like, there's way more than 5 episodes of this show. What the hell? Why are there only 5 on here?
Right. Man?
I mean, I get it. Yeah, sure. I'm sure, like, I'm probably the only person that was wanting to watch Salute Your Shorts that day, but damn it, I want to watch them all when I get in that nostalgic mode.
Sometimes that's just like you get a show in your brain and you're like, this is what I want to watch at this point.
I did love Salute Your Shorts like crazy, though. Do you remember that one? Were you familiar with that one growing up?
Salute Your Shorts? Absolutely. I didn't watch that one. I didn't watch that one a ton. It was on a bunch. My sister watched it.
Okay.
And she's a little bit older than me. So,
she's probably...
it all adds up here.
Yep. What about Hey Dude? Did you watch Hey Dude? It was on around the same time.
Hey Dude, yep. I watched both about equally as much.
Okay. I also really enjoyed Hey Dude as a kid. I thought that was a great one. Also was a huge fan of Pete and Pete.
Oh, yeah. Sign me the fuck up for some Pete and Pete. See, like, that's the one that I looked forward to coming on.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's the one that I look forward to coming on.
Were you like me as a kid, especially as we're ADHD brethren, where like I didn't exactly know when shows were on?
Okay, that's not the question I thought you were going to ask. I thought you were going to ask me if, were you like me as a kid and did you fold pieces of paper into knives and try to give people paper cuts? And my answer to that was yes.
Like paper cut from Pete
and
Pete?
Yes, from Pete and Pete, yeah.
Top tier villain, arch nemesis of Pete.
I had construction paper pretty much solely for that purpose in my house.
That's
was
crazy.
To try to, like, you fold it and then you just... with your
fingernail, I know. I always thought that was cool.
It was for school projects.
Even as a kid, I thought that was like a cool, unique idea for a kid's villain. I was like, man, Pete and Pete, like, they get it.
Mm-hmm. Even right now, like, bring that back.
They're doing something together, which I just saw, which is actually like a really awesome thing.
Yeah.
It's like
just as a heads up between the two of us, I may lose power.
Oh, is it storming?
Yeah, it just started.
All right. Well, hey, man, that's life on the edge.
Yeah.
You know, if we don't get to the movie before all the banter, well, then that's just what God has determined is the way this episode's going to go. So
that's true. I mean, I need this very badly because we are on like day three or four of mid-90s heat wave. Like,
oh, yeah. Yeah.
Dude, it is brutal. That's really, really hot here to have that sustained
sure.
this early in the year. Anyways,
I know
back to your question.
Oh, yeah, I did ask a question.
ADHD, let's go.
Oh, yeah, it was about that.
I did have a couple of shows that were like my favorite shows that I kind of knew when those were on, but everything else was like a, ooh, heck yeah. And it was weird when like every day, like a show would come out, I'm like, oh, hell yeah, I love this show. Not connecting in my head. It's yeah. just on at this time every fucking day.
Yep. I really don't think it was about until I think I knew Sunday night was Simpsons. I also didn't understand the concept of seasons. Like, why did the show stop? Like, what? Why isn't The Simpsons on tonight? You know?
Yeah.
Shit like that. I didn't get into it till then. And also, like, around my freshman year, actually more of like 7th grade, 8th grade, junior high is when I got into wrestling real hardcore.
Okay.
And so I knew that was on Monday nights. I had figured that out. But other than that, like, I would just channel surf and then like a show would be on. I'd be like, oh yeah, fucking Pete and Pete. I love this show.
Yeah.
And then I'd stop and watch. But it was never. Well, also, like, there weren't very many channels I'd flip through. As a kid, you have like your ones that you know are going to have the bangers on. So like, you do check Nickelodeon and then you're like, ah, all right. Yeah. What's on Cartoon Network? What's on Fox?
I was about to say, I only, like, when I was a kid, it basically lived on Nickelodeon. Mm-hmm. We didn't have Cartoon Network when I was young.
Okay. I didn't either till, later on.
Disney was something that kind of grew as
sure.
something, like,
they used to just play the movies. Brink. Yeah.
Exactly. So, my TV, down in the basement, if we weren't playing games on it, we were watching Nickelodeon or dude. whatever station had TGIF.
That was, I think TGIF was NBC. It could have been ABC. It was ABC.
It was ABC. Yep.
ABC.
My sister changed it to that on Fridays, and I was here for that.
I also love TGIF. I do remember that, too. That was a big family thing.
And then SNICK, you know, back to Nickelodeon.
Saturday Night Nick, yeah. SNICK. Yeah. But again, that was mostly because it was on, like you said, it rarely would leave Nickelodeon.
Yeah.
It was Channel 33 for me. What was it for you?
33.
No shit! Hey!
It was 43, and then it switched to like 33, and I think Disney was 36.
Disney was 29 when we got it. It wasn't, Disney forever was a pay channel.
Mm-hmm.
At least in our area, and we never had
it. Well, in your area, I think it came, there's no way we spent any sort of money on TV. We had, so 16 was TV Guide channel, 17, 18, 19, 18 20 was those were
crazy.
Paid
we remember this.
Yeah.
Crazy. What channel was your Cartoon Network? 30?
I have no idea.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Mine was 48. I remember that one too. It was 33, 48. Those are the two bigs that you check.
I don't think we had anything above 50.
Okay. What was your Fox on?
3.
Ours was 11.
Okay.
We didn't. 3, I think, was the NBC. I think 3 and 6 were NBC. 4.
6 was CBS for me.
Okay. 4, like, we had two versions of each. I think we got two different broadcasts being in Indiana. I think we were getting from the East Coast, and we would also get out of Chicago.
You had the Central and the East Coast?
We didn't have Central Time Zone, but we would pick up, you know.
The channel.
Yeah. So that was coming from Chicago. So we had, like I said, 3 and 6 were NBC. 4 was always what eventually became the CW.
Same.
And before it was even
5 was WB. PBS.
5 was also my PBS, so that's cool. Mm-hmm. And then, yeah, like, 6 was a copy, 8 and 12 were copies. It was very weird, but they were like the same two channels.
Mm-hmm.
Fuck, I was gonna ask you something else about TV, because this is interesting as fuck to me now.
Yeah, it's wild to just see the, I guess it's not super wild, but it's wild enough to have the crossover between the two. Actually, did I say 36? I didn't. 36 for me was MTV.
Okay, that was your MTV. I think my MTV was 28. That's what I was going to say. Disney Channel. So you watched a lot of the movies. Do you remember Luck of the Irish?
I do not.
That's about the kid. It's basically Teen Wolf, but the kid's a leprechaun instead of a werewolf. He's on the basketball team. And then like one St. Patty's Day, he comes downstairs and he has pointy ears. And then it turns out his mom, who's like a redhead and Irish at the start of the movie, speaks with like that over the top stereotype Irish. Oh, what do you know? She's a leprechaun, actually. And so he's half leprechaun. And then, you know, he has to struggle with dealing that. And then he uses it eventually to overcome and win the basketball game. And then he's totally 100% cool with being a leprechaun now. And everybody's like, wow, you're so cool.
Nope.
Don't remember idea. That one.
Damn. No, I mean, so watch the thing is there is only like a handful of Disney movies that I liked that like if they were on, I watched them.
What else
so like
they?
Anytime was Brink was on. I watched okay. that. I
with
watched
Andy Brinker?
That. Yeah. And then I watched the one Smart House. It was dumb, but it was fun. But
I vaguely remember Smart House, but
I loved the Witch Mountain movies. So like whether it's the old school like Escape from Witch Mountain or Escape to Witch Mountain, which also had Brink dude in that. I think The Rock was in like a reboot.
He
of
was
that
in like the
10 years ago,
2000-ish remake. Yeah.
I never watched that, but I, for some reason, whenever those were on, I think it was mainly because like I knew the movies and I could just follow along without listening while I played like the Nintendo on the screen next to it.
Sure, sure.
Because we just had like two old TVs in the basement. I remember watching The Little Giants while playing Star Tropics.
Okay.
That's like one of like the most standout to me memories when it comes to NES gaming as a kid. Don't know why.
Did you ever watch Xenon Girl of the 21st Century?
I have seen enough of it to piece it together.
Yeah, like, I like I've that seen one enough of and it the sequel a whole lot. Again, this is probably where like part of my obsession with the whole pop princess thing.
My supernova girl.
Oh, yeah. And she would say, Zeta's pita or something, and they'd do like a little hand gesture. I watched a lot of that one with my sister. Again, I was the opposite. My sister was younger, so she was super into Disney Channel. So like when she had control of the TV, it was on Disney Channel, whereas I had, you know, I was watching Nickelodeon or SNICK when I was of a certain age, finer taste.
Yeah, more refined.
But yeah, I watched a lot of that shit with her, and I liked a lot of it. I really enjoyed Even Stevens. I had a crush on Ren Stevens.
Okay.
That was Shia LaBeouf's like
Disney
big break.
Channel? Yeah, okay. Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yep, Disney Channel.
That was like right before that Holes movie, right?
He got Holes because of it, because Holes was, I think, a Disney production. It wasn't like the Walt Disney banner, but it was, they have like subsidiaries that they release different movies through.
Sure. As so they still do.
Yeah. Of course.
Even more so now.
Yeah.
All you Marvel fans and Star Wars fans.
Yeah, 20th Century Fox and all that junk. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Wild.
But, man.
Don't they own MTV now?
I'm sure they do. They own everything, don't they?
That's fucking crazy. Yeah.
If you know, out of context, that's going to sound like I'm really racist when somebody just highlights me saying, yeah, they own everything, don't they? Somebody can really clip that and ruin my life. I'm sure, man, Luck of the Irish. I remember this movie so fucking hard. That's so fucking hilarious.
I'm going to look it up. I guarantee you that gigantic thunder strike right there was picked up by the audio. Luck of the Irish.
It was from 2001, so it was like...
Oh, yeah. There's no way I was watching this in 2001.
But, like I said, Xenon was like 99, but I guess that was when your sister was younger and probably watched it more. And this is why I stuck in.
At that point, I have a younger brother, so like he definitely had Disney on, and I'll just be hanging out downstairs or something. Kyle Johnson, what is he in?
He's one of those guys that you see him and stuff.
Yeah, he's the main actor in that.
Yeah, there's that other guy too that you see in tons of stuff. He plays the leprechaun, Timothy Amundsen. Amundsen
played Seamus McTiernan.
Oh yeah, Ryan Merriman is who.
Oh, Kyle Johnson was his name. Duh. I'm like, why is this?
He was in Smart House. Oh, Smart House had Katie Sagal. I do remember this one.
Yeah,
I remember this fucking movie.
That's probably why I recognize it. Yeah, that's Smart
exactly
House.
It. That's why, because it was like 2 years earlier. So that's exactly why he looked exactly the same.
Yeah. Oh, 1999. Oh, yeah. I totally watched this. Man, that kid has been in a lot of stinkers. Holy shit.
Hey, man, you got to pay the bills.
Yeah. I actually probably also remember him from Final Destination 3.
Oh, okay. Sense. Yeah, he's that guy in that thing, you know?
Yeah.
The thing, Sean.
Man, this was... Man, I know last week you said... You guys can tell how much we like this movie by how little tangent that we got into. I'll say, I like this movie that we're going to be talking about a whole hell of a lot. But man, it is so easy for two ADHD fucks to go down a rabbit hole talking about TV stations for no fucking reason.
Well, this will be fun because I am tangenting because of the opposite reason.
Man.
Yeah.
Dude, what?
I know, it's weird. Yeah, like,
I don't understand.
It has everything that you would want. It just doesn't, for me, have any of the magic of In Bruges. I don't know.
Oh, well, you can't compare it to In Bruges.
You really can't, even though it's the same writer-director. It's Colin Farrell. It's the dude that gets punched out. And you've got the added fucking greatness of
Woody Harrelson, Walken, Sam Rockwell.
Woody Harrelson, but Sam Rockwell, dude. Wow. I fucking love Sam Rockwell and like everything.
Same.
And I don't know, man. Maybe it was just frame of mind. Although I watched this movie at like a completely normal time yesterday. I wasn't rushed.
Yeah.
And it's got Walken too, being Walken. I like a lot of parts of it, but really just, I don't think it's a bad movie. I just, it didn't grab me.
I can see that. I can see that. I can't see... Like, I couldn't see you being like, I hated this movie.
Yeah, nothing like that.
I can see that. And even, like, as much... I thought about my ranking of this movie towards the end of the movie, and I never think about what my rating's going to be or how I'm going to rank it any other time. But something about this movie was like, man, I'm really enjoying this, but how would I honestly rate this movie in my enjoyment? And I always go by my enjoyment, right? You know, that's just the way I do it. The problem with this movie for me is it's almost 2 hours long.
That's a big one. I almost texted you and I was like, 147, dog, heads up. But I forgot and sorry. So.
Oh, no, it's all good. I actually, Sarah's in Paris right now. So like. So I'm taking, she left yesterday. So I'm taking shorter days at work and doing some work from home. And I had all the time in the world to watch this today. And sure enough, I waited until, I don't know, 4:30 to start it up. I'm like, hour and a half. Let's bang this out. Whoopsies.
There's
a lot of pieces that work in this movie together. The problem with it is it takes too long on each part. And it goes in, and I understand why, because it has to go in and tell the story of each of the psychopaths, the real story of the psychopath and the story that's being told by what's-his-face's character in the movie, by Marty, you know, the thing he's spinning in the movie. And for me, that felt doubly as long as it needed to be.
Yep.
And just went a little long in the tooth.
So much of it was so much added fluff and... it was on a meta level. Here's the thing, and I very will rarely say this. I think this movie is a twofold thing. I think Homeboy was trying to make a movie that he really can't, Martin McDonagh. Like,
yeah.
And honestly, to foreshadow for what we're going to get into next week, I think this would have been a great Guy Ritchie film. Yes. I think it needed that fast paced.
Yes.
You're absolutely right. Like all this extra meta stuff of Marty being a writer and writing a movie as the framing device of this movie is number one. I've seen it done better 100 times. And it's adding so much extra junk to this movie. Like the whole time I was watching it, I was like, Kiss Kiss Bang Bang does this so much better.
Mm-hmm.
So
to just take a couple back steps to what I was saying about my rating, and obviously not going to reveal anything about it. The reason why I enjoyed this so much is I just like the style of film with these different pieces that all kind of gel together. But it's just like you said, it's done so much better in so many different other places. But it's for me kind of like watching a mystery movie and being like, oh, man, I'm enjoying this, but this other movie does it better. Well, I like the pieces, but it was so predictable.
Exactly. On the subject of it being like the mystery movie, it's not even that because like,
again, I'm not saying this is a mystery.
Yeah, I know. But like the way that you're trying to like follow stuff and figure stuff out. This is, again, it's like, I think in the hands of a different director, it could have been pulled off in different, maybe more successful way. Cause like, all right, the big fucking plot reveal that Sam Rockwell is the Jack of Diamonds killer. Like, we don't figure anything out. We've never seen any hint to it. All of a sudden, like, one guy is at his apartment and picking up cards. He's like, yo, boss, he's got thousands of these, and they're all missing the Jack of Diamonds. What the heck? They just come out and fucking tell us, dude. Like, what?
Well, they actually even tell us prior to that, because you have Sam Rockwell, Billy, shooting Woody Harrelson, Charlie's girlfriend, in the stomach there, right?
Yeah, and he flips one at her, too.
And it calls him the seventh psychopath, and then goes dot, 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 and the first psychopath. Mm-hmm. So you're like, wait, what? Mm-hmm. And then it just dawns on you, like, the first psychopath was a Jack of Diamonds revealed at the beginning of the movie. So it, like, even that really felt flat. It didn't fall flat for me initially, but it felt flat. Dude, this movie's an hour and 50 minutes. Mm-hmm. That happened at the 1 hour mark.
I know.
The 1 hour mark. And so they then had another 50 minutes to make that reveal feel completely flat. And 10 minutes after that, he's going through this entire shootout ending of the movie that I sat there and went, don't know how they're getting there, but that's how this movie's going to end. Like, and by that point, he felt like a comical sidekick, like not even a Deadpool. Like, he kind of feels like a Deadpool in the moment when you figure it out. Like, he's got these two sides. He's kind of funny. He's actually killing people off on the side. And then it just ends up feeling like he's a murderous goofy.
You know, it's, again, it sucks that we're coming to this off of In Bruges, because I feel it's maybe tainting the waters a bit too.
I on the flip side of that, a thought that I had was this, you know, this was before In Bruges. No, this wasn't. This was after In Bruges.
This was the second. That's what I'm saying. That's what makes it so weird, because it seems like such a stumble.
It feels like this should have been what led to In Bruges. Like, he came out with this, and then he had this epiphany, like, oh, I need to tighten up here. I need to make this moment count. And then he came out with the masterpiece that was, like, In Bruges.
Like, see, I think In Bruges was, like, the surprise hit, so they let him off leash a little more and let him do something else, and he wanted to try this movie. And like I said, it's a completely different style of movie to what In Bruges is. What's also insane to me is that the soundtracks were composed by the same guy. I remember like nothing in Seven Psychopaths, like, eviscerated any emotional input from me. Whereas I feel like In Bruges is always hitting those perfect notes perfectly when it needs to. And that was weird for me. I didn't find that out till after the movie, but I remember watching it and being like, man, like, nothing, what? That was weird to me.
the thing with this movie in terms of music is that it does the thing that I don't really care for. I don't care for a soundtrack that is just normal songs, like score something, have some score somewhere. And this movie does what I think a lot of like a lot of movie makers or whatever do as a cop out from that complaint that I just had is take your normal songs, but have them done indie-fied or have it done it sung in a different style. Right. But it's the same songs that we all know and love, but it feels out of place for the scenes and only just goes along with like the tone of the movie instead of what you're watching.
Yeah. And it honestly will take you out of the movie because it's familiarity to you. And you're like,
yeah,
it, especially like if it is like the slowed down indie cover, because you spend a while like, wait, I know this song, and you're thinking about the song rather than focusing in on the movie. So I think overall it's a negative thing. And as a person who creates nothing, a bit lazy. One other like thing I just wanted to note that I found a negative of the movie, because I do, I'm not trying to shit on it completely, and I feel we'll move into other areas.
We're going to get into some good stuff, I think, here.
As always happens, like when you hear a word over and over, goddamn, they had to fucking say the word psychopath every time. And I got so tired of that fucking word by about an hour in. And we still, like, every time they mention it, psychopath, 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 psychopath. But the psychopaths, and it's just like, God, I'm a psychopath. He's a psychopath. We fucking get it, bro.
I mean, at what point do you just come up with a slang word that's shorter than that in a normal dialogue?
Exactly.
Like, that doesn't feel normal.
The seven psychopaths. Yeah, the seven psychopaths.
So that's things that we didn't enjoy about the movie. But I think there is a lot of things about this movie that does work. I did find the story, while unoriginal, I mean, it's very novel, but you've seen bits and pieces of it in a dozen or so other films.
Yeah.
Just, this is just kind of, or not even films, but also video games.
Yep.
It's been done in so many different formats, but it has an interesting twist on it. I do enjoy the story that you have Colin Farrell playing Marty, who is a screenwriter, and he's trying to write this script called Seven Psychopaths. And as you find out through the movie, he's basing most of these air quotes psychopaths off of other stories that he's been told, and most of the time they are pretty much verbatim somebody else's story, and he's kind of passing it off as his own. Fine, you know, by the end of the movie, it's weird that that doesn't really hold as much weight as I had a feeling it was going to, but it does. But he's running into a block. He can't figure out where to go. He's having this crisis where he doesn't really want it to go a violent direction by the end of the movie. And so he's stuck.
What also, like, none of that is really explored. This whole relationship with his girlfriend is not explored. His alcoholism,
who, by the way, is one of the psychopaths for some reason.
Unlike his struggles with alcoholism are never a point in the story. It's just, He's
just constantly
writer
lambasted for it.
Writers are alcoholics, I guess. It just is a trope to be a trope.
There's never not that there's going to be a payoff for somebody being an alcoholic. There's no reason for it to be in there. If that was removed from this, the only thing that would be affected is, well, nothing.
Yeah.
Him being a dickhead to his girlfriend.
I guess, and that would be, it seems all there just for that, because it never affects him negatively in any other situation. Like, even at the end, when, like, he just finishes his bottle of booze, and Woody Harrelson's like, he's going to drink and drive? And it's like,
yeah, it's tossed in. Okay, so if I'm going to talk about In Bruges for a second, like, it feels like that was going for like one of those you chuckle a little bit for it, but the problem is you were hammered over the head with it this whole time. Mm-hmm. If this were in Bruges, you would have, if someone was being portrayed as an alcoholic, you would just see them drinking all the time and no one would ever say anything about it. Maybe you would see a glance at the bottle. And it's one of those things that after a couple of watches, you're like, oh man, this guy's going through some shit. He killed a kid. He's a heavy alcoholic. This is weighing on him. And it's something you would just notice. Whereas in this movie, every other scene, Billy, Sam Rockwell's character, is like, dude, you're an alcoholic. You're an alcoholic.
I can't believe you. And like to get, again, to bring even more comparisons to In Bruges, we talked about In Bruges being like a near perfect movie where everything it does and shows you has a reason and a purpose, which is, again, it's funny that this came out later because...
the same director.
If he was the drunkard in Bruges, it would have had a payoff at the end of the film where like he stumbled into a ladder that fell on somebody that saved him or something. Like it would have been there for a purpose to set up a payoff. Whereas in this one, like it's nothing's ever mentioned about it. And his girlfriend, like she's there in two scenes. They fight off camera and then we never see her again. Like,
yeah. And also in Bruges, I don't think they ever would have mentioned, yeah, he was drunk, so he fell into this. Like, we would have just happened to see it naturally, and he probably would never have mentioned that he was drunk. We would just never see him with a drink again. Like, it trusted us to be viewers. You know, whereas this, it was there for no reason outside of maybe adding depth to his character. Okay, back to the good stuff. Yeah. So Billy, his buddy, is the one that is constantly calling him a drunk. That's his best friend. Billy's an actor, played by Sam Rockwell. And we find out that he, with his friend Hans, played by Christopher Walken, they kidnap dogs. And then Hans returns the dogs when a for reward poster comes up, being like, oh, I found your dog. Here you go. And Hans, Christopher Walken, he looks like this nice older man doing a good deed. And he's literally, they're just frauding people out for reward money. And
making them stressed about their dogs.
Yeah.
And then taking money from them. I mean,
I actually thought that was a very enjoyable, very early revelation in the movie.
Yeah.
Like, oh, that's interesting.
And it could have, like, they could have done so much more with that. But again, it's like the first 20-ish minutes of the movie and then nothing is ever done with it again. Like...
Except for the entire movie is based around them.
Sure, yes.
Taking the wrong person's dog.
Yes.
Which Hans doesn't even know about. Billy's the one that does it.
Of course. And then it affects, which, yeah. I'm not shooting on it because I want to say, off the beat, I really love the way this movie starts. I love the way that it's just this long, drawn out, Tarantino-esque conversation between these two guys that are hitmen waiting to hit a woman. And it's like, God. What,
five, shoot somebody in the eye,
5-8 minutes long of just like Tommy, literally it's a one shot of these two guys talking. And then eventually we as the audience see somebody in the background is like approaching them from behind, and he comes up and just shoots them both in the head instantly. And we're like, that catches your attention. That was a cool opening. Like, it, I love the way it's a slow burn. It's a one-er. We get the action. We get to see. And then he drops the cards on him. That's a cool little flourish. We're like, dealing with somebody here.
It that makes it feel awesome. Like it's going to be a faster paced movie than it that is. Too.
Other good thing. Like, I love Sam Rockwell. Sam Rockwell is great. I think he's a bit too much for this movie. Again, maybe with somebody else. But he's still fantastic to watch. He's the best part to see on screen.
So I'm going to put a little pause on like the rest of the plot ski to just jump in here and say one of the other great things about this movie is I think that each story aside, I think everybody absolutely crushed it in their roles in this movie, with the exception of like the second half of the movie's Sam Rockwell, Billy. And I don't think that's his fault at all. It's just like his character's second half of the movie is so weak compared to the first half of the movie. So weak. Like, even minute 50 to minute 60 is amazing. I thought that was peak Billy when he shoots the girl in the stomach and he feels like he's a badass, he's going to go get them. And then he just turns into this, well, psychopath. Mm-hmm. Like, he's unhinged for no reason when he was very much so hinged-ish for the first. Okay, I can just go on and on about that, and I don't want to. But Woody Harrelson absolutely crushed it. I thought he was chilling, and his character had layers in that, like, what's too far? What code does he live by? Does he actually live by one, or is he double bluffing, bluffing, triple bluffing? When he sees the scar on Hans's neck, he's like, nope, I'm out of here. That's really fucking gross, dude. I'm gone. Like, but right after just shooting Hans's wife in the head.
Yeah, I know what you're saying. Fun fact, Woody Harrelson was a late replacement. That role was originally Mickey Rourke.
I'm happy with that replacement. Though, I feel like Mickey Rourke could have played a scarier bad guy.
Absolutely, 100%.
Than Woody Harrelson.
That's the thing about Woody. Like, Woody's a great actor, but, like, he's very rarely intimidating. He can be really good in roles, but he's not the tougher guy. But that's why
he has to have, like, something where he does something purely psychotic and really grotesque to make that character believable. Yeah, otherwise it just feels like a funny man playing a part.
But that's why the villain has such an obsession with small dogs, because Mickey Rourke in real life, like, loves tiny dogs, and he has quite a few of them. And so that's why that character was written that way, because it was for Mickey Rourke. And then him and the director, they had just creative differences, and he walked away. So they brought in old Woody. And again, I think Woody's fucking great, too. I love Woody Harrelson in, like, 99% of everything. So,
no, it's funny that you mentioned Mickey Rourke, because another thought that I had about this movie while watching it is I know that this isn't even close to a perfect comparison, but I just kept getting, like, Sin City vibes from it, just like in terms of the story and how there was 9 different things going on in this movie, but it was all one story that was being told. I know it's not the same thing, but it's funny that you mentioned Mickey Rourke, because I wasn't even going to mention that on the podcast.
Oh,
and I'm like, oh, Mickey Rourke, he was in Sin City as well. Interesting.
He sure was. For the most part, I feel like Billy is, like you said, he's great in the beginning, and then he's really blah for, like, minute 60 to minute 40. But then, like, the actual shootout part is pretty funny when, like, he has the 2 guns in his hand and 1 in his mouth. Mm-hmm. And then when they tell him to throw his guns out and he throws 2, they're like, I know you have 3. I saw 3 guns. And he's like, ah, shit. So then he throws that one, too. I thought that part brought me back around. I was like, all right, that was pretty fucking funny. Yeah. I did like that. And a lot of that's on Sam Rockwell just being a fucking psychopath. Oh, he
but
said
then,
it.
Yeah, you said it. Hey. But then it loses me about 2 minutes later when he gets shot in the head and he goes, paw.
He keeps, yeah. He keeps talking to the dog, like, and he's, like, been shot in the head.
You've been shot in the head, and you're, like, still reaching out and trying to get it. Like, okay, I understand what that scene was supposed to do. I understand, but God, was it stupid.
I didn't understand even what it was supposed to do. It just seems silly. Although, I was reading one of those other things, and it ties back to when, like, he's giving his whole thing, and he wants the shootout. He says, this movie's ending the way I want it to. And that's pretty much what he did there. He wanted to end.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And that was at 1 hour and 10 minutes into the movie. So you had 40 minutes to figure out how it was actually going to get there. And there was some fun parts, like when Marty and Hans figure out that he's actually the Jack of Diamonds killer. But their reaction to that just felt so ridiculous to me. Their reaction made no sense. Oh, but the paw thing is because he spent the entire movie trying to train the dog to do the paw, which means Charlie, Woody Harrelson, was never able to get that to be done. And here he is being shot because Woody wants his dog back. And the dude that took him, the dog formed a connection with. So it was like an F you to him. Mm-hmm. It was... But yeah, the reaction to Billy, that revelation, It's just weird. It was weird. Mm-hmm. With like everything that everybody's done in the movie.
So many different things are weird. Because, like, Christopher Walken loses his religion after he takes peyote. And then, like, 10 minutes later, he gets shot in the chest and he found his religion again. Like, just so many things just don't work. He shouldn't have directed this one, man. I just don't think he did what he wanted to. Man, I could be wrong, but it definitely feels that way. I also don't think this didn't get very good ratings, right?
No, it's pretty well rated.
It is? Okay.
Yeah, it's 7.1 out of 10 on IMDb. Wow.
I thought it was lower. I thought it was like middling.
Seven Psychopaths. Let's see Rotten Tomatoes. I'm going to guess 51. You got to guess before I click this?
At Rotten Tomatoes, are we doing critic score? I'll say critics 63, audience is probably going to be like 80 something. I feel like audience liked this.
Okay, so I'll say critic 51. I think that's what I just said. Mm-hmm. And I'll say audience 70.
Okay.
Okay. I clicked on it. Jesus Christ. Wow. Okay, you ready for this?
Yeah.
It's 83% for critics.
Wow.
And 71% for audience.
I feel like I missed something in this movie then, especially if the critics liked it that much. I don't know, man. I don't agree with all critics. And as we always say on this show, you know, different strokes, different folks.
Fuck them critics.
I wouldn't put it that. Okay.
I'm really surprised with how high it was. Like, I thought I was being a little mean with 51, and so I felt like I was undershooting it, but by 30 whole points is pretty crazy.
Wow.
But you do have, just to wrap this up, we wrap the story part of it up. We do have Billy trying to help Marty out because they're, you know, best friends, and we find out that Billy thinks that Marty's like the best screenwriter of the generation. So he does little things like put out ads in the paper. Hey, are you a psychopath? Come talk to me, you know,
yeah,
to give your story, which I thought that was funny when Zachariah came and it turns out, you know, they killed the Zodiac killer and all of these other serial killers.
I did like that part. That was cool. And that was fucking Tom Waits, who I'm a huge fan of musically and actorially. Also, another, I feel he was a little underused in this.
Way underused. I did like the callback at the end of the movie.
I did also enjoy that. I almost turned it off. And then I, like, the phone rang and I was like, what the fuck? And then I was like, oh, there's a little more movie.
I was excited that there was a little bit more movie because it, like, went back to a place that I really enjoyed in this movie. As soon as they went to the desert, I didn't like the movie as much. Everything else before I loved.
I agree. The desert is the real turning point.
Yeah. It's like the opposite of The Meg 2, where like the first hour of the movie really sucks, but when they get into the brightness, it's like the complete opposite. Put me back in the dark. Make this more grungy.
Give me, like, that dirty LA.
Yeah, exactly. Oh man, they could have done so much more with this. But anyways, it turns out they kidnapped the wrong person's dog, Woody Harrelson's Charlie. He's a big old mobster. It turns out he was able to figure out kind of where, like, Hans's operation is and where they keep the other dogs. Unfortunately, Hans doesn't know anything about this. Billy, it's kind of Billy's operation here. And so, funny enough, Jack of Diamonds shows up, saves the day in that moment. But they think that Hans is the brains of this operation, so Charlie goes and kills his wife in the hospital. That was actually a really skin crawly scene. I thought when Charlie, Woody's character, goes to the hospital to visit Hans's wife, who's getting cancer treatment, and she's in there and she knows something's up and she goes, oh yeah, no, she's having surgery right now. Like that whole dialogue that leads up to her being shot in the head. I thought that was a whole skin crawly start to finish scene. And that doesn't even end there. I think it was skin crawly from the beginning of that to when you have Christopher Walken sitting down across from Woody Harrelson in the lobby of the hospital and just staring at him, and that whole scene, perfection. Mm-hmm. I thought that was fantastic.
And it's funny, we talk about Woody Harrelson not really being able to nail the intimidating role, and then you have fucking Christopher Walken, who's 25 years older than him, come in and intimidate the absolute fuck out of me, even. He's so, like...
It was... That's what I was about to say. He was intimidating me.
Like, the way he just fucking just stares, dude. He gets it so much better than Woody does. And again, that's just... That's God. Christopher Walken. Such a joy to watch in every spot. I think he also... he has another one of the funniest parts of the movie when he walks out of the desert and the guy turns around and recognizes him. He tells him to put his hands up and he goes, no. He's like, what do you mean, no? I got the gun. No.
I don't care.
It's so great. Just his casual dismissiveness.
Yeah. Christopher Walken, absolute gem in this movie, start to finish. Like, his range was incredible. We find out that he's actually one of the psychos from one of the stories.
Different.
Like, Billy has told Marty about the story of the psychopath. And it's, you know, this dude that tormented this guy that killed his daughter. And this guy watched the other dude, after years of torment, slit his own throat. And so this guy did it as well.
The Quaker.
And it turns out that's why he has a huge scar on his neck, because that's him. And Marty's been stealing his story.
Mm-hmm. He tried to kill himself too. Well, it's not that he's stealing his story. I like the reveal too, when like he's just asking about the movie that he's writing. So Marty tells him about one of the stories. And I love that Billy or Sam Rockwell's coming up like almost at the end of it, and he realizes what he's saying. He's like, no, don't tell that one.
And Hans already knows.
Oh, he's so fucking he's like, much.
Oh, no, I want to hear more about this.
So that, again, greatness. That's Sam Rockwell. I love Sam Rockwell.
And so Marty finds out from Hans that his wife is dead. Billy's not with them. Billy's fucking Woody Harrelson's girlfriend, because sure, that's something that had to be in this movie. She's like a deus ex machina. Like, she has to, like, it's never revealed until this point that he's sleeping with Woody Harrelson's girlfriend in the movie. So she's like, she's playing both sides here. Not playing, but it's weird.
Yes.
It is very weird. And so she's mad at him and is calling Charlie to let him know that Billy's got his dog. And at the same time, Marty's calling Billy and saying that Charlie shot Hans's wife. And this is the moment where I thought Billy was like, fuck yeah, let's go. Mm-hmm. And that he just turns and there's something that switches in him and he shoots her in the stomach. And like, not that I'm advocating for somebody to get shot in the stomach,
but it was cool. And unexpected. I was like,
oh, hell yeah. Let's go. This is going to get wild. And then it doesn't.
Yeah, exactly. Up until that point, Billy had been like real cool, real funny, real relaxed. He'd not been threatening or intimidating. So that is a cool turn. It's well done, well handled. But yeah. And then again,
all we've seen of the Jack of the Diamonds is really badass shots.
Mm-hmm. And so much more. He
turns into a Looney Tune character.
Of this, just doesn't pay off.
Yeah. So they end up going into the desert, presumably to hide out. Was there much more to that I missed?
They were going there to hide out, and then they do peyote, and he tells the whole description of the movie, and then he gets it in his head that he wants a big shootout. And so he goes and has his shootout.
Yeah. Blows up the car. Calls Woody Harrelson. It's like, come here, look for the flaming Buick.
Look for the burning car.
Come alone. No guns. Which I thought that was funny when he shows up and he's like, what, you don't have any guns? He said, you told me not to bring any guns. I didn't bring any guns.
He turns around. He tells him to turn around and immediately shoots him. He's like, I was aiming for his spine.
Yeah. I'm like, okay, that's smart.
But like, again, how many times do you
watch a movie where you're like, why didn't you just shoot him there? He shot him right there. Awesome. We've seen smart. Him
as a competent shot. And then like the rest of them, like he doesn't hit him in the spine when he has the shootout on the rocks. He misses like Well, no, he does hit the one guy that's driving the car.
Mm-hmm.
Then he blows up the other car. And that leaves the one dude and Woody Harrelson. I guess he does okay.
Yeah.
But then, yeah, it's also weird because, like, he wants to die? And why is that, like...
That makes no sense to me. Like, I understand Hans wanting to die and that character capping. Yeah. Sure. But also, okay, so I could see it, like, Billy's an actor. He wants to, he's high as a kite. He's like, I'm going to have the most epic role ever. I guess that could play into that.
Maybe it's too, because they're looking for him, like, because they did say that that's how they see his name in the paper, remember? Because old
front
girl
page.
Dies.
Yep.
That's probably.
Actor suspected in the murder.
Yeah, I forgot about that till just now. But that's, I guess, part of it. But again, I feel like, I don't know. He would have shown us this better in Bruges.
But I don't think that works as an explanation here. Yeah. Because he gives his whole description of how he wants the movie to end prior to them even finding out that he was the killer.
Yeah. Also, I just remembered this. The whole thing with, like, Woody Harrelson's gun jamming. What is the purpose? It doesn't have a payoff.
The purpose of that. Okay. It almost has a payoff. Payoff, but it doesn't.
Yeah.
It's like, so he has a gun that he loves that keeps jamming, keeps falling apart. It takes forever to get back together. I will admit that this really made me laugh. At the end of the movie, when you have Billy, Sam Rockwell, sitting there with a flare gun aimed at the dog's head. He's going to blow this dog's head off with a flare gun. You got Charlie goes to shoot him in the head. Billy's not even going to move. And then his gun malfunctions. He tries to shoot him like 4 times. And Billy doesn't do anything. What's he going to do? Like, at that point, if you're going to shoot the dog, shoot the dog. Like, I'm not advocating for that either. But
he didn't
clearly
even
was
gun.
Never going to shoot the dog.
Yeah, he didn't have another flare. He only had the one.
Yeah. He clearly was never going to do anything.
He just literally stood there and waited to get shot in the head. It's so weird, man.
He does like this countdown. He's like, I'm going to count down from 5 and I'm going to shoot the dog. And the part that made me laugh.
That part was good. Yeah.
Is so you got Woody Harrelson struggling to try to fix his gun, unjam it, taking it apart. And Sam Rockwell gets down to 3. And he's like, oh, man, can you just start back up at 5? Come on. Come on.
He's like, no. Okay, 5. Again, really well done, really well acted. That's the benefits of Sam Rockwell. But, man, it's so weird to me coming off of what we had to this. It's like, you couldn't even tell it's made by the same guy.
No. Man, how is it that, like, I watched this movie and I thought to myself for so much of it, I enjoy this movie, asterisk, to the point where I started thinking about a rating system because of these problems I have with the movie. And then I just spent the last 40 minutes being like, man, this movie sucks.
It's weird to shit. And again, I think part of it is that we're coming off of In Bruges and unfairly, or maybe fairly too. I mean, you are judged against your works as a whole. And I don't know, man. It's weird.
I sincerely thought that this came out before In Bruges, and I was like, man, nice. You got it together. You tightened it up. You made something awesome. And I'm glad that this was the building block. But man,
not at all. So, anyway, you want to get into rating it, bro? You got yours.
No, I don't know my rating. I know what I will give it.
I got
is
you.
What I was thinking about.
Okay.
If you have yours.
Sure, I can do one.
That'd be sweet.
I got it locked and loaded. All right, Sean.
Yeah.
If you and your slightly elderly partner in crime were running a dog kidnapping ring.
Yeah.
And you had cages for between 1 to 10 dogs in your warehouse. How many dogs are you kidnapping with more dogs kidnapped being a higher payday, so therefore a more favorable score of the movie?
Okay, so this is going to come as a big surprise, considering how much, like, we really tore apart the things that we didn't like in this movie. I'm going to be kidnapping 7 dogs.
Okay, that sounds about where you would...
7 dogs and maybe, like, a tiny little dog. Like
a like point two?
Like a little, like, something that you can put in a pocketbook.
Sure, sure.
Like one of them dogs.
A little Yorkie terrier of a sort.
Yeah, you don't even need a crate, like a cage. Just, like, put a mixing bowl over the top of it and you're good.
Okay,
I stand by what I said at the beginning, right before we, like, tore it to shreds, all the stuff that didn't work. I like this style of movie. Mm-hmm. I like something that feels... It's not that it feels fresh, it's that it just does something that's completely different than what I'm so used to seeing in a movie. Like, it tried something really well, and where, while it didn't work in all of the bits and pieces, and while I think it ran really long in the tooth, like, if that conversation where he's like, this is how I want the movie to end, happened at 1:10, I would have been much happier if the movie ended at 1:30.
Yeah.
That I didn't have to wait 40 minutes, a whole bunch of shit that didn't need to happen.
Mm-hmm.
End at an hour and 30 minutes, and this is a different story. I like having something that jumps between, and it's not even really narratives. They're, like, contained little short stories, but they're, like, kind of pieced together, and there's revelations within them. I like what was done. The missing 2.7 dogs are just the things that I didn't like about the movie. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, I have to be really loud about those.
Yeah.
Because I did just watch it.
And you did just watch In Bruges.
Yeah. Yeah. I think I would have been a little bit more fair on this movie if, while recording, I didn't find out that this came out after In Bruges.
Sure.
Like, even having just watched In Bruges last week, I still would have been more fair on this movie if this wasn't the follow-up movie from the same director.
Mm-hmm.
Weird. All right, Kyle.
Yeah, bro.
I would rent this movie. I don't need to own this movie.
Sure.
I would rent it. I'd have a nice Saturday night watch, make some popcorn.
I did rent this movie.
Nice.
I don't remember it. I didn't remember hardly any of it, so.
Kyle, you have a pocket full of Jack of Diamond cards.
Okay.
In a pocket, sure, whatever. Mm-hmm. Maybe in your pocketbook that carries dogs. You have a pocketbook full of Jack of Diamonds cards. You come across 17. You come across 17 no-gooders.
Ne'er-do-wells.
That's the one. Ne'er-do-wells. Mm-hmm. My man, 17 ne'er-do-wells. And,
sure.
You know, you're a fighter of crime, kind of. Vigilante, Mr. Jack of Diamonds.
Okay.
How many of those ne'er-do-wells out of 17 are you dropping a Jack of Diamonds card on after killing them? With the higher body count being mm-hmm. a better score.
I'm going to say 9, which I would wager is a little over half. So
mathematically, yeah.
Yeah.
That fits the bill.
Yeah, definitely 9. Definitely 9. Again, I don't hate this movie, but overall, I didn't really love it either. It was so odd, so disjointed at points. Like you said, so much of a slog at others. As enjoyable as each character is and the performances of the actors, I do feel Colin Farrell's the weakest here, which is crazy because we got into this for Colin Farrell, but Sam Rockwell and Christopher Walken chew the scenery so much that Colin Farrell, who is not an actor of that caliber, really doesn't really come through as much. He is just the blank slate writer that we're supposed to insert ourselves into / identify with. But yeah, you know, I love Tom Waits. I loved his cameo. I feel he was a little underused. I really did enjoy that whole side story of them killing all the famous serial killers. I like that. That was a cool concept, which I liked from Dexter too. That was his whole shtick.
Yeah.
So yeah, overall, I don't hate it, but I don't love it. It's just, it's, it also is such a bad thing to compare it to In Bruges, but you have to. And it also makes me kind of happy that we're not jumping into the other movie of his that also has Colin Farrell that reunites him with Brendan Gleeson, because while good, that movie is very pretentious and also very dour.
Mm.
Let's say. We should watch it sometime, but not right now.
Yeah. I think it's actually, you brought up a really good point that we didn't even mention. Marty, Colin Farrell's character in this movie is the main character, and he is, it doesn't even seem like he's the 10th main character in this movie by the time you're done with it. These, you talked about Tom Waits' character in this movie. Tom Waits' character has way more of a character in 5 minutes of telling this story than Marty does in the entire movie.
Yeah.
It's hardly there. If you were to consolidate all of Marty's story into like one long scene, it's a fraction of this movie. The story of this movie is everybody else's story. And unfortunately, I think you make a really good point that he is like the least best character in this. He just doesn't shine. And I've grown a fondness for Colin Farrell over the last couple of weeks.
He's really good. I'm excited that I think we've both seen our movie for next week anyways, but I'm excited to rewatch it again. I've only seen it one time, and I did really enjoy it. And we talked about Colin Farrell playing it subdued here. He is anything but in The Gentlemen. Spoiler alert. Listeners, if you want to jump ahead and watch next week's movie with us, we are covering The Gentlemen. It's our third Colin Farrell flick in a row before we jump. Is it the fourth? What else did we do?
Killing of a Sacred Deer, brah.
Yeah, this Killing of a Sacred Deer. Oh, this will be the fourth.
Yeah, it's going to be our fourth one.
That's right.
Killing a full of the month Sacred of Colin Deer. Farrell we just okay. did. It is streaming on Netflix, so check it out
tight.
We talked off air last week, and you mentioned The Gentlemen. I'm like, man, I love The Gentlemen. He wasn't in that. Dude, I typed it in. He's front and center, like behind.
He's such a good McConaughey,
and I'm like, oh shit, I remember him.
Yeah, he's the coach, the boxing coach. He plays it so well, and that's what I'm saying. Like,
I'm so hyped
coming out of this. I mean, I know he has much more work in between these two movies, but us watching them, because he's completely polar. He does overact and chew scenery in The Gentlemen, and it rules. So excited as fuck for that too.
But I cannot wait.
Other than that, let's shut the fuck up. Let's get the fuck out of here. I love you, buddy.
Love you too. Fuck yourselves. Oh yeah, it is your week. But also, listeners, go fuck yourselves. Would you rather after the song? See you there.
All right, Shawnee.
You don't have to do anything. I've got a fan right there. Circulating air in here.
Okay. Would you rather, for the rest of your life, you can only say one of these words. Would you rather say the word psycho or the word psychopath?
Psycho.
Okay.
Yeah. Like, I cannot remember the last time I've actually said the word psychopath. Mm-hmm. Like, and if I did, it was in a way or context that was to disparage somebody else. Like, dude, you're a psychopath. Yep. Like vigor on the path. Psychopath.
Plus, you know, the coolest villain in Metal Gear Solid isn't Psychopath Mantis. The best move from M. Bison
Mantis.
Is Psychopath Crusher. It's Psycho Crusher. Psycho Crusher.
All right. My fucking God.
Love you, buddy.
Love you, too.